Log Talk Radio.
Thursday to everybody. Is that a thing? Has anybody ever wished somebody a happy Thursday before? Jam-packed show for you today. I believe I have 13 stories, which is a lot. So I'm probably not going to get to them. But we have the Republicans now openly flirting with just stopping doing their jobs completely. That's cute. It's in regards to the Supreme Court. And I'm really angry at the Democrats over this because they don't know how to win. I sound like Donald Trump. You don't know how to win. It's sad. Sad. No, but they really don't. They have no clue how to play politics, and that's hurting them. So I'm going to jump into that. Should be in the first block here. Then who is the leader of the progressive wing of the Democratic Party? Is it Elizabeth Warren, or is it Bernie Sanders? Well, Jonathan Capehart has some thoughts for us on that, and they're silly. So we'll discuss that, and then later on in the show, there is some more WikiLeaks stuff we have to get to. The gigantic merger is something that we're going to talk about, the media merger. And the International Criminal Court is looking like it may collapse. Which is not good. That's really not a good thing. So I'll give you the reason why and what's been going on with it. All right, so let's go ahead and get started here. And I want to go ahead and do that with a thank you before anything else. So I did a segment here yesterday about our new studio. And when I threw it up on YouTube, I titled it Secular Talk Needs Your Help. It's a fundraiser, and the basic idea is we need some money for the new studio that we already purchased, and we're far along in the process of renovating and getting in shape and all that stuff. And so we got to pay for contractors and building materials and equipment and a million other things, and an editor for me for finally. And so I asked for the insane number of $100,000. When I came up with that number, I thought it was insane. When I said it on air, I thought it was insane. That's an ungodly amount of money. I don't know how I asked for that, especially since man, if there's one thing I hate, it's asking for money. It's like the last thing I'd ever want to do. But I came out here, I did the segment, and then I wanted to give you guys an update real quick. It's been one day. So we launched the fundraiser yesterday at this exact same time. I think it probably hit YouTube at about 1:30, maybe 2 o'clock Eastern time. So I'm sitting there doing my editing and uploading, and I get a text from Lilith, maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, I guess 4 hours max after it was uploaded to YouTube. And she's like, "Hey, dude, have you looked at the fundraiser? It's already at 20 grand. I'm like, what? It was just the most shocking thing I've ever read. Like, huh? So that had me floored. And then today I wake up, I take a look at it. It's already at like 43 grand. That's unbelievable. We just launched this thing. We're almost at 50% of the goal. I'm amazed by that. I mean, I didn't. Lilith and I were talking when we were, you know, crafting this whole thing. And I said, "How long do they do it for? They do the fundraisers for like a month?" She's like, "Well, you could do it for as long as you want, I think." And so I told her, I'm like, "You know what? Could do 2 months because I'm asking for this ridiculous amount of money that's just a lot of money. And 2 months seems like a better time frame. Now we're a day into it. We're almost 50% of the goal, and I'm floored, and I'm humbled, and I'm honestly honored by this, and I'm a little choked up too. You know, when I look at that, I think, geez, man, I guess we're having some sort of an impact. I mean, I guess people listen and they like it, and, you know, they come here for news and information and facts, and they come here for my loud mouth to give my take on things. And, you know, the fact that you can show me this kind of support and do it in this overwhelming way, I'm touched by it, man. You know, so I just wanted to do this segment. We're a day into the fundraiser, and I wanted to say thank you. Every dollar given by every person means so much, and I've gotten a lot of great messages, people on Twitter, you know, but some people saying, hey, man, look, I can't offer any money at the moment, but if you want, I could do graphics, editing, whatever, so just let me know. Some people saying, hey, we're on some hard times, but I sent you $5. Some people saying, you know, we did it Bernie style, went $27. Every single one, I want to let everybody know sincerely, every single one of those messages is touching. It really does mean a lot. And thank you. So let's keep this thing going forward. And I can't wait to unveil the studio, and I can't wait for everybody to see what you guys built. And I can't wait for the show to grow. And, you know, hopefully we keep having this kind of impact, and I don't want to let you down. All right, now let's get into the news of the day. The Republicans are now openly flirting with the idea of permanently blocking any and all Supreme Court picks from the Democrats. You heard me right. Any and all Supreme Court picks from the Democrats are just de facto, default, blocked. Doesn't matter which pros, zip it, www.zipit.com, but what if I zip, next Anthony Scalia, zip. It doesn't matter who the Democrats put up there, the Republicans are saying, well, maybe we just block everything. So John McCain made that point a few weeks ago. Now, I think he just was kind of babbling and didn't know what he was saying, and then later on he was like, yeah, no, I didn't really mean that, so I don't want to do that. But when he said it, it sparked this thing, and then other Republicans were like, hey, you know what, maybe that's a good idea. And now this week, the Cato Institute, a right-wing think tank, is out with an article saying this, quote, as a matter of constitutional law, the Senate is fully within its powers to let the Supreme Court die out, literally. When you get past the gotcha headlines, breathless reportage, and Inauguration Day, if Hillary Clinton is president, it would be completely decent, honorable, and in keeping with the Senate's constitutional duty to vote against essentially every judicial nominee she names. And then Ted Cruz also weighed in, and he said, quote, plenty of precedent for less than 9 justices on the Supreme Court. This is unbelievable. So there are so many angles to this that piss me off. But first and foremost, let's talk about the disconnection from reality that this Republican Party has. They are sincerely, genuinely making the argument. No, see, Hillary Clinton is such a left-wing radical that anybody who she picks is going to be super-duper progressive. So, you know, you're well within your rights to just block them forever. That's the argument they're making. On what planet do you have to live to not realize that Hillary Clinton is basically an old school Republican? I mean, that's why we despise her. I mean, you have the massive amounts of corruption, which is par for the course, unfortunately, in today's political landscape. But then, yeah, she voted for the Iraq War. She voted for the Patriot Act. She supported NAFTA. She supported deregulation of Wall Street. The list goes on and on of all the things, all the positions she's taken that are right-wing positions. And they're like, no, we can't allow her to pick a justice because they would be so liberal. They'd be so amazingly liberal. And this is the thing that I've been screaming to the Democrats for a long time. If they're going to say all your choices are super liberal and we're going to block them anyway, why not actually pick a super liberal justice? Why not actually say, say, yeah, you know what? You're right. That's who I picked, and you should still approve them. But they don't do it because they can't fight, because they don't know how. So the Republicans keep dragging the spectrum right. The Democrats keep following them to the right. And then the entire time, they keep turning around and saying, you're too liberal. So even when the Democrats officially adopt old Republican policies, the Republicans are like, yep, nope, too liberal. So they're just not – they're not connected to reality. It's honestly like a fundamentalist religion at this point. If you're a die-hard Republican, it's just a fundamentalist religion. You know, truth doesn't factor into the equation. You have these things that you believe are just axioms and sacred, and if anybody goes back on it, they're excommunicated. I mean, it's almost like the story from a few years back where the Republicans literally came up – I think it was congressional Republicans – came up with a purity test. So they create this purity test. Meanwhile, you take historical figures like Ronald Reagan, who they say they love, and you make him do that purity test. He failed something like 8 out of 11 questions. And they're like, yeah, but this is what you got to do to be a real conservative. Even Reagan fails your conservatism test, you jackasses. But most importantly, the Democrats here, you have an opportunity. Like, it's classic Democratic weakness to see this situation where the Republicans are openly discussing blocking forever and letting the Supreme Court collapse. They're openly discussing that. And instead of the Democrats saying, oh, really? That's the conversation you want to have? Great, let me at you. Instead of doing that, they just put your tail between your legs and walk away. Haven't heard a peep from the Obama administration about this. Haven't heard a peep from Hillary Clinton about this. You know what I would do if I was them? I would go out there and I'd say, oh, that's cute. Well, what do I have here? Look at this. This is a poll. This is a poll from CNN. We have 67% of Democrats say that your sorry asses should vote up or down on our pick. 68% of independents say that. Wow. 64% of Americans overall say you guys need to vote and do your goddamn job on our pick for the Supreme Court. But most importantly, even 55% of your Republican base says, you know what? Stop being assholes. Do an up or down vote. So you're going to say no to even your base. You're going to say no to everybody in the country. Oh, well, thank you for leaving me this gift at my doorstep. Watch me go to work. So then all the Democrats, you coordinate this. You have meetings over it. You actually get down your literal talking points. You all go out there to all the Sunday shows. You do all your appearances on CNN and MSNBC and Fox News, and you fucking crack their skulls. You say the Republican Party is an un-American party. We have the overwhelming majority of the American people who say, do your goddamn job and fill the Supreme Court, and they are refusing to do it. I would go out there and read the article to the American people. Read the parts that I just read for you, where they say, oh, the Republicans are well within their right to let the Supreme Court die out. This is what one of the two major parties is openly advocating for, America. This is no longer a party that functions within a democracy. They're trying to take a step outside of the system and act tyrannical, act fascist, act authoritarian. They're not even saying, hey, let's hear them out and then slap them down. They're saying, we're not even going to hear them out. We're not even going to hear them out. So this is how you handle that. And by the way, the Democrats, on top of being weak, they're also just wrong because they pick justices like Merrick Garland. So Merrick Garland, I don't want anybody to misunderstand me here. It's not an open question as to whether or not Merrick Garland is better than a loathsome cretin like fucking Antonin Scalia, and Trump says he wants to put the next Antonin Scalia on the court. It's not an open question. I'd take Merrick Garland every fucking day of the week from now until infinity over Justice Scalia. But he also is, keep it real, a centrist. On some issues, like criminal justice issues, for example, he's kind of right-wing. Now, on some social issues, he's more left-wing. So, and there's a million areas where he is more left-wing. Again, he's better than Antonin Scalia, but that's a low bar. But this is what the Democrats do. They floated the idea of picking Sandoval for the court. He's a Republican. But Obama backed away from that. Instead, they went with Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland is a centrist justice. So they picked him, and the Republicans spit in their eye anyway. Meanwhile, there are endless quotes of the Republicans saying about Merrick Garland back in the 90s when he was picked for a lower court, oh, this is the best kind of pick we could ever hope from a Democratic president. So there you have it. The party's gotten more and more extreme, and it's just been proven by their own words. And the Democrats have unfortunately followed these people to the right. Now, Hillary Clinton says, yeah, you know what, I would keep Merrick Garland up there. But what I would do is I would do an assault from both sides, man. I would say, here's the deal. I'm going to pick a progressive judge right now. That's what I'm going to do. There's going to be a progressive judge. And you guys are going to approve this justice, or if you don't, well, then I will ratchet up my attacks on you in the public. Remember, the American people are on our side on the Supreme Court, so I'll ratchet our attacks up. I'll get people very mad at you, and I will pick an even more progressive justice. So your choice. You either get a progressive justice now or a more progressive justice later. Go ahead. And again, okay, so you want to permanently block? Be my guest. On that issue alone, I will crush you in the next elections. It won't even be close. It won't even be close because I will so thoroughly paint you as un-American, undemocratic losers who whine and throw tantrums when they don't get their way. Because that is what you're doing. I'm not even going to have a hearing on the Supreme Court justice because I don't agree with them because they're picked by a Democrat. That's what you're doing. Okay, so you want to do that? Well, buckle up, son, because I'm about to take you for a fucking ride. I'm about to destroy you in the media, and you're about to say, okay, no more, all right, we'll vote on it and we'll approve him, fine, just don't pick a more progressive justice and stop hitting us. That's what's going to fucking happen. But these Democrats don't do that. They're weak. They're not going to argue against the Republicans and call them out for this, and they're just going to continue to float centrist justices. And therein lies the disease and the rot within our political system. When we have Republican presidents, we get Republican justices. When we have Democratic presidents, we get centrist justices. So when do we get a liberal? When do we get a progressive? Anybody? Bueller? We don't. We don't. So the time has come for the Democrats to fight and for us to drag the Democratic Party left and show them how it's done. Okay. Next. All right, who's going to lead the Democratic... the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. Let's discuss that. Jonathan Capehart wrote an article for the Washington Post on who he thinks can and should lead the progressive movement to hold Hillary Clinton accountable and keep her left. And he's narrowed it down to Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Makes sense. And then he says this, quote, Bernie Sanders is a general who wants to lead an army he hasn't seen fit to formally join. Warren is a fierce fighter in that army whose fellow troops want her to lead them. Not only did Sanders not join the Democratic Party to run for its presidential nomination, Not only did Sanders not join the Democratic Party to run for its presidential nomination, Okay, that's weird. But after his defeat, he declared, I was elected as an independent. I'll stay 2 years more as an independent. And his refusal to raise money for the party during his epic campaign has not been forgotten. To call on its members to follow him would be akin to a general leading a battle with troops he failed to pay or feed. Hashtag good luck with that. Before this presidential campaign, I wasn't much of a Warren fan. She reminded me too much of a professor who was as brilliant as she was humorless and hectoring. Her position on and tactics in opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership I found particularly irksome. But in the impending battle for progressive priorities, Democratic Warren has more credibility with the base and the party than independent Sanders thinks he should have. Okay, that was terribly off base. So, first of all, like, how disconnected are you from actual... rank-and-file progressives. Apparently, he doesn't know any of them. And that's the main reason why I wanted to cover this, is because Jonathan Capehart is just proving he's a Washington insider 101 now. He's lost connection with the pulse of the American people and the pulse of actual liberals, because there's no denying, when Elizabeth Warren came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton, it was even after Bernie Sanders was basically out of it. So she waited all that time to say, okay, Hillary. And people in the liberal base were like, oh, fuck you. Because, keep it real, man, it's the progressive base Bernie has the heart of the progressive base. His campaign, his movement had the heart of the progressive base. So when somebody came out when the wounds were still fresh and said, yeah, jump ship, and she never endorsed him either. And people were saying, look, in Massachusetts, if she endorsed him, perhaps he would have won Massachusetts and it could have changed the race moving forward. I don't know if he would have won, but it would have made a difference. There would have been a dent there. So people thought, oh, you abandoned us and you went for the way more corporate right-wing candidate. You know, and you didn't, it wasn't artful. You thought it was artful, but you did it right when the wounds were fresh, and people were like, okay, well, fuck you. You know, oh, Miss Progressive over here, and this is how you end up acting. So not only is it not close, there was a time when she 100% lost the liberal base, where I would say the majority of them were like, we're done with you. Now, look, I held out the entire time because while I did disagree with every step she did there, and I think she should have endorsed Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren's record is as solid as anybody's when it comes to actually getting progressive shit accomplished. So the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is a perfect example of that. I mean, you can't take that away from her. She basically fought the Obama administration and said, no, what we're going to do is we're going to have, this agency which makes sure that the big banks are not screwing over, the financial institutions are not screwing over the American people. And it's done some great work so far. That's just one thing, but there are a million things. She's reliably progressive in terms of her voting record and in terms of her record. But there's no denying that she lost the progressive base. And then what argument is he making? He's saying, well, look, she has more credibility with the base and the party. Reel it in, son. No. Bernie has more credibility with the base. She has more credibility with the actual party. And when I say the party, I mean the literal Democratic Party, the Democratic establishment. Now, the establishment doesn't like her. But what she is as far left as you can go within that party establishment where they will tolerate you and not laugh you out of the room. Bernie Sanders gets laughed out of those Washington rooms because he actually, you know, is totally a fighter for the people and he's not interested in, you know, playing the games and schmoozing and being tactical and how he, you know, the sausage is made in Washington. He ain't interested in any of that. He's a warrior. He's a lion for the people, and they don't like him. Lobbyists hate him. Other politicians hate him. Elizabeth Warren, she's a little bit more tactical in how she handles the establishment. I think she knows that if she just laid out exactly what she believes, they would hate her. So she's more, okay, let me try to work within this thing and kind of bring it down from within, like a Trojan horse, if you will. But bottom line is, while I like both of them, this couldn't be more wrong. I mean, it's obvious that Bernie Sanders more has the heart of the Democratic base. And some would even argue, hey, you know what? Even he at this point, there are people who are mad at him for endorsing Hillary Clinton, period. You know, even though I think it's pretty clear he's making just a down-the-line, lesser of two evils argument, there are some progressives who would say, yeah, no, he lost it. We're not interested in anybody who would fall in line behind Hillary Clinton. So this is so off base from what the actual progressive base thinks that is basically comical. And this idea of, like, attacking him for running as a Democrat when he was an independent, it's the only way he had a shot at winning. I find it hilarious that people make it like, oh, yeah, that's what you're going to do? You're going to join the party? Yeah, because if he doesn't do it, he would get no traction whatsoever because independent candidates are treated like shit. So, I mean, please, man, what stupid arguments. And then, oh, you go back to being an independent? Yeah, wouldn't you, after the way the Democratic Party treated Bernie Sanders? He got 47% of the vote when he got no help from the DNC. He got the entire party establishment against him. And what, you want him to stay in that shitty-ass party? Fuck that. He'll caucus with the Democrats, obviously, but he's not going to, you know, be part of the party anymore, nor should he. So I don't know what planet this guy's on. He sounds a little ridiculous saying, oh, it's obvious that Elizabeth Warren is the leader. No, because what you're missing is what he's conflating is Washington versus the people. Yes, Elizabeth Warren has a little more credibility in Washington. By the way, she still doesn't have much, but she has a little more credibility in Washington. Bernie has no credibility in Washington because he's actually a fighter for the people. So who actually has the heart of the people more so? It's obviously Bernie Sanders. Okay. All right, let me take a break. When we come back, I have a story from The Hill that really just sums up why I despise Washington politics. And then we have some more WikiLeaks. And I can't wait to tell you who the Hillary camp considered. They thought about it. and they almost came to the conclusion that they should nominate the worst person for the Supreme Court. So we'll talk about that and much more. Stay right there. And all I wanna do is to find thee. My clothes ain't close now, till we cross the line. And yeah, it ain't my game to play, and the whole of time.
We are back, bitch. All right, guys.
talk a little bit about why I fucking despise Washington. I have a story here from The Hill that really just sums up why I despise Washington politics. So they explain, vulnerable Senate Republicans running in states where Hillary Clinton is up in the polls have pulled their punches against the Democratic nominee, knowing they'll need help from some of her supporters to survive on Election Day. While Democrats have made an all-out effort in these states to bash Donald Trump and tie incumbent Senate GOP candidates to the billionaire businessman at the top of the ticket, Republicans have recently gone soft on Clinton, opting to focus on their own records and the needs of their states. In Ohio, for example, Senator Rob Portman's campaign has recruited people at Clinton rallies, this guy's a Republican, to sign up for pro-Portman yard signs and has touted his union endorsements. That's something a Republican never does. Now, other people read the story and they'll go, I don't know what you're talking about, Kyle. What's the problem? What's the problem? They did a calculation. Well, you have Hillary's up in the state where they are, so they got to be a little careful because Donald Trump is so unpopular. You don't want to, you know, come out strongly on his side because then maybe you lose the election. So you got to walk this fine line. Okay, what am I going to do? How am I going to calculate this? How I got to think strategically and tactically. How am I going to get through this? Yeah, but see, that's the thing that annoys me to no end. Is that we just casually accept this. Like, okay, okay, so they're just trying to carve a path out and pretend they believe the things that they think you want them to believe in order to get elected. What's the problem? Well, the problem is, very simply, you have no convictions. You have no core. You have no moral center. You have no principles. You have no beliefs. You don't care about policy substance. It's not about that. It never was about that for you. If you have to do a calculation like this, it was never about that with you. But the craziest thing of all is, they're also just wrong. Like, they think, oh, this is what I'll do to try to save my ass politically. Who has the best records when it comes to, getting reelected time and time and time and time and time and time and time again? I mean, for example, Bernie Sanders does. He's the most liked senator in the fucking country. He had an 89% approval rating from the people in his home state. That is unheard of. 89%. That means Republicans in his state are like, yeah, I love the guy. I don't know why anybody would dislike him. He's fantastic. He's tremendous. He's great. So Bernie Sanders has never done a political calculation in his entire life. Bernie Sanders, this is what I want. I want to have single payer, universal health care for everybody. We need to try to stop income inequality and we pass a living wage. We need to get out of the wars. So he goes out there. He just tells everybody exactly what he believes. And even when people disagree with him, because, again, it's proven in the numbers. It's not 89% fucking Democrats in Vermont. So it's proven in the numbers that even people who disagree with him go, you know what? I don't agree with that guy. And I might not agree with him on a majority of things, but I like him. You want to know why I like him? He's telling the truth. He has principles. He has a moral core. And he's telling me the world as he sees it and what he wants to do. And I trust that that guy is looking out for my best interest, even when I don't agree with him on the specifics. So I like him. And he's been reelected roughly since the year 1832. That's when Bernie Sanders was first elected. Little known fact. And by the way, it's not just like everybody's, oh, there goes Kyle again, praising Bernie Sanders and just talking about the, you know, that philosophy, the philosophy of social democracy. No, you know who else got reelected till the cows came home? Ron Paul. Why? Well, Ron Paul, he's got the same thing going on as Bernie Sanders. Totally different ideology, libertarianism. But people listen to him and they're like, oh, you know what? He has a philosophy. He's standing for something. He has convictions. He has principles. He has policy goals that he's pushing for. I might not even agree with him on all the specifics, but you know what? I trust that guy. So he just kept getting reelected time after time after time. The people who are always the quickest to get ousted or to never get elected in the first place, I hate to pick on her, but I'm going to do it. Alison Lundergan Grimes, for example. She's a Democrat who ran in Kentucky against Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, his approval rating was so low, it was comical. Everybody thought, it doesn't matter who you run against him. Whoever runs against him is going to win. Mitch McConnell is a disaster. So the election, everybody's like, oh, Alison Lundergan Grimes is going to win. She's going to win. She gets all these big endorsements from big-time Democrats. She ends up losing and face-planting. She ends up getting blown out. Now, how did that happen? Because Alison Lundergan Grimes ran a campaign where she's like, I'm a Democrat, but it's all right because I'm kind of like a Republican. I'm Republican light. I agree with Mitch McConnell on a lot of things. And yeah, so you should totally like vote for me or something. I don't know. She even when she was asked in a press conference, hey, who are you going to vote for in the presidential election? She wouldn't say President Obama, or she wouldn't say she did vote for President Obama in 08. I don't remember if it was 08 or 2012, the way they framed it. But she was like, I'm not – so anyway, what I was saying about the solar panels or something, she just tried to get off the topic. So people look at that and they're like, gross, because you're just trying to win without putting in the hard work of winning. What is the hard work of winning? Well, what people expect from politicians, we rarely get it, but what we expect from politicians is, give me your vision. Give me your vision. Give me your philosophy. Give me your policy goals. Give me how you're going to work towards it, and then I'll determine if it's genuine and if I agree with it enough, and then we'll determine whether or not to vote for you. That's what people want. You could just smell on somebody like Alison Lundergan Grimes. All they're doing is sheer calculation. How do I say the right things at the right time and press the right buttons to try to get people elected without letting them know that I don't believe anything and I have no core? My precious, my precious. It's just so gross to watch. I fucking hate it. And this happens all the time. And now all these Republicans who were firebrands before, you know, when it looked like when it was a primary and, oh, my God, they thought it's going to be Hillary Clinton on the Democrats. But who's it going to be on the Republican side? Maybe Jeb Bush, huh? Maybe Marco Rubio? How about the Rubes? So they're out there, and they're probably screaming against Hillary Clinton. Yeah, Hillary's terrible, this reason, that reason. They look at the polls later on today when it's Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. They're like, where's the political winds blowing, son? Okay, yeah, no, oh, but Hillary Clinton, I never really disliked her that much. I mean, what am I going to tell you? Whatever, man. Please vote for me. You fucking stand for something, you weak babies. Stand for something, but you don't. And that's why you're slimy creatures of Washington, who, by the way, are also mostly in it for the narcissism and for the self-aggrandizement, and they're corrupt. I mean, they are corrupt. That's what it is. This is why Congress has a fucking 9% approval rating, because we're electing the lesser of two evils every single fucking time. And, you know, they're not looking out for you. They're snubbing what their constituents actually want, and they're snubbing policy goals, and they're just doing favors for their competing special interests. For corporate America, for the military-industrial complex, you name it. So this is why I despise Washington, and it annoys me that we don't talk about stuff like this, which is very basic more. You'd never hear a conversation on CNN about this. About like, oh, isn't it gross how like this is just obvious political calculation and they're admitting they don't really stand for anything and they don't – because if you believe something, what do? If you believe something, you say, look, Donald Trump aside, whatever about Donald Trump, but here's what I stand for as a conservative. You know, hey, man, I'm pro-life. Hey, man, I'm fill in the blank with whatever right-wing policy. And argue for it because that's what you believe. But they don't have any beliefs. They don't have any beliefs. I would like a principled, actual conservative more who believes in that stuff and would argue for it more than one of these slimy motherfuckers who's like, oh, political winds, where are you? Please, I hope I'm not exposed as not believing anything, but I will literally say anything you want if you will just vote for me. Okay. Next. All right, let's go to WikiLeaks. We have some more news here from WikiLeaks. McClatchy is reporting, quote, hours after conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia passed away, the Clinton campaign floated a Texan as a possible replacement. So the emails said the following. Remember our discussion of Wallace Jefferson, Chief Justice in Texas? So somebody sent this to Podesta. Podesta, of course, you know, was the head of her campaign. What did he respond with? Quote, yup. So in other words, what they're saying here is, yeah, we had a conversation about maybe appointing this guy Wallace Jefferson. So do you remember that? Scalia just passed away. So, you know, if it's her and she gets to make the pick, I'm just saying, Wallace Jefferson, keep him in mind. Now, you might be wondering, well, I don't understand, Kyle, why is this news? Well, Wallace Jefferson wasn't just the Chief Justice in Texas. He was also a George W. Bush administration official, and he's a Republican. The Hillary camp considered appointing a Texas Republican, who was a Bush official, to the Supreme Court. Progressive who likes to get things done. Like things that the opposition party wants, apparently. God, what are you doing? I swear this is a democratic disease, man. That's what this is. When we have Republican presidents, we get Republican justices. When we have Democratic presidents, apparently, we get Republican justices. When do we ever get a Democrat? When do we ever get a liberal? When do we ever get a progressive? Now, I'm being slightly too harsh on them because Hillary rejected it. So, and she was like, no, I'm not going to do that. But who did she stick with? She stuck with Merrick Garland. Now, I'll say again, Merrick Garland compared to Justice Antonin Scalia, it's not even close. Trump says, I want to pick the next Antonin Scalia. You want somebody in the mold of Scalia. That's crazy. Scalia believed the devil was real. He said blacks belong in slower track schools. He believed in torture. I mean, he's a terrible person and terrible justice. So I'll take Merrick Garland over Antonin Scalia, you know, every time, every time. But that doesn't mean that Merrick Garland is good. It just means he's not as bad as Scalia. So Merrick Garland, for example, is fairly conservative on some criminal justice issues. That's not acceptable. He voted the wrong way on some Gitmo cases. That's not acceptable. He's in favor of, you know, regulating money in politics, but he's not in favor of getting it out. So, okay, repeal Citizens United, yippee-skippy, but that doesn't mean, you know, you still have Buckley versus Beliveau and First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti, and those are the cases that really allowed money in politics. So it's like, okay, you're just – it's either a centrist judge or a Republican, centrist Republican, centrist Republican. When do we get a Democrat who says, you know what, yeah, I'm a liberal? Bernie Sanders, when he was running, what did he say? He goes, yeah, I have a litmus test for the Supreme Court. Are you going to get money out of politics? Well, that sounds good. I like the way that sounds. That makes sense. And he's also right when it comes to, you know, the judicial angle of it. So, in other words, it is the case that money does not equal free speech, and the Supreme Court wrongly interpreted that. If money equals free speech, you should be able to go buy crystal meth right now, because you're not buying crystal meth. You're just expressing with speech how much you like crystal meth. It's not illegal to say, I like crystal meth. So that's okay. Boom. There you go. So prostitution is totally legal, too. I'm not paying for a blowjob. I'm just expressing speech about how much I enjoy blowjobs. It's money speech. Here, speech. Let me give you some speech about blowjobs and how much I like them. So here's some speech on it. You know, same thing with money in politics. Oh, I'm not bribing this politician. I'm just expressing how much I like this politician. No, because what actually happens? Then they turn around and do favors for you. So if you're going to allow money in politics, if you're going to allow money to equal free speech, you got to mean that across the board, and it doesn't mean that. These guys are massive hypocrites on that front, and they basically say just in the political realm, money is speech. And also, that opens up the door for what? The most rich person, the people that have the most money, to have the louder voice. That's fundamentally against one person, one vote. So, but this is the Hillary camp 101, man. Okay, let's consider a Republican, and best case scenario, we'll get a centrist, and this is why your base hates you. So, you know, don't get mad at us. Don't blame us. We told you from the beginning this was the reality. Hillary cannot help herself. At every turn, her and her campaign slap the base in the face. So this is just an example of it, number 9,312, and now you know. Okay. All right, so now let's go to one more here from WikiLeaks. We have some more revelations here from WikiLeaks about the internal workings of Hillary's campaign. So Neera Tanden emailed John Podesta. Of course, both of them are massive Democratic establishment insiders. And Neera emailed John Podesta about how the New York Times was doing critical coverage of Hillary Clinton, and naturally they didn't like that. So they were strategizing on how they can best soften the blow and try to make that stop as much as possible. And in the email, Neera tells a story about how Mike Bloomberg had coffee with the owner of the New York Times, and it potentially helped them go softer on him. So that in and of itself is a story. You have Bloomberg calling up the New York Times like, yeah, let's go for some coffee. And then they go for coffee, they talk it out, and it's basically there's an argument to be made that the New York Times went softer on Bloomberg after Bloomberg spoke to the owner, and the owner might have told the people, you know, hey, ex-nay on the Bloomberg scale, a little soften up a bit or whatever. And that's not good. That's collusion between the government and the media. I mean, if we wanted that, maybe we'd just have our own Pravda and, you know, just have only state press in the United States. So that's bad in and of itself. But Neer is bringing this up as the example of what to do as a result of some critical coverage times. And she says, look, Hillary herself would have to call, the owner of the Times and basically schmooze him to get better coverage. Again, horrific collusion. This is the media and the government, or in this case, the Democratic campaign, trying to figure out, like, how do we work together to get better coverage? It should not be a consideration at all. The point of the press is supposed to be adversarial. But let me go ahead and give you some text now, because they go on to say this in the email. So Neera says to John Podesta, he also thinks the brown and women pundits can shame the Times and others on social media. So cultivating Joan Walsh, Matt Iglesias, Alan Perry Bacon, Greg Sargent to defend her is helpful. They can be emboldened. Do you understand what they're saying there? They're saying, okay, look, we can work the New York Times through Hillary directly calling the owner and saying, hey, let's go have some coffee and please stop fucking being tough on me in your paper. That's one way. And then the other way she's saying is, well, what we could also do is we can get some brown pundits and some women pundits to shame the Times on social media. So play the race card, play the gender card, and shame the Times into, are you going tough on a woman? How? That might be sexist. Are you a Bernie bro? That might be sexist. I'm just saying it might be sexist. I'm trying to help you out here. I'm just trying to help you out, man. Don't be sexist, so don't criticize Hillary Clinton. And have people of color. Okay, so look, as somebody who is, you know, who's an African-American, I think your coverage has been very unfair. So use race, use gender to shame the Times into lightening up. And furthermore, they literally named specific writers, people in the media. Okay, so these people, that's it. Now you can pretend. Now you can stop pretending to be journalists and reporters. Let's just call it what it is. Joan Walsh, that's hilarious. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Everything I say is objective, and it's my thoughts. I'm not colluding with the Hillary campaign in any way. They're laying it out. They're saying, yeah, I could just tell Joan Walsh, write a piece and shame the Times for being tough on Hillary. What do you mean? Of course, that's what we could do. Oh, so you're in the arm of the Hillary campaign. Great, as long as we know. As long as there's, you know, full disclosure, it is what it is, then we'll know you're working for the campaign, basically. Thank you. Matt Iglesias, hilarious. You know, this guy thinks he's such a genius. When you read some of his tweets, you're like, how does anybody think this guy's a genius? Well, now we know. Hey, you know, the Hillary campaign wants to email you, give you a call up. Hey, buddy, write a piece that protects Hillary from an objective press doing their job. I'm on it, boss! How sad are you? You guys are a sick, sick, sick joke. Who does that? Who does that? You're working with a campaign. The whole idea of the press, the whole idea of reporters and journalists, you're supposed to hold people in power accountable, whether you like them or not. You're not doing that. You just said, no, I'm going to do your propaganda for you. So that's what you are. You're not journalists. You're not reporters. You are propagandists. When you have Hillary's campaign internally saying, let me sick the dogs on people who are being critical of Hillary, you're fucking propagandists. So I just want you to know that. That's the whole point of me doing this segment. I just want you to understand that. You could try to lie to yourself when you put your head down on your pillow at night. You could just say whatever you want, do whatever you want to make yourself feel better about what you've done. But you're propagandists. Now, again, if you say, hey, I like Hillary, and yeah, I am working for Hillary here, and I am pushing that narrative, well, that's one thing, and then at least you're being honest. But you're not saying it. You're pretending to be objective. You're pretending to be reporters and journalists. But you're not your propagandists, and this proves it. So just understand what you are and, you know, save your snarky, smug douchiness coming after people who were Bernie supporters. Oh, Bernie, bro, sexist, sexist. Now, we know it was all a fucking fraud. We all know it was a fraud. We all know, hey, muck up stupid-ass arguments to use against them and smear them, viciously smear them and smear their character and do libelous attacks, because that's the only way we can get our candidate to get approved, because, let's face it, she's just worse. She voted for the Patriot Act, disaster, right-wing idea. She voted for the Iraq War, disaster, right-wing idea. She wants Syria intervention, disaster, right-wing idea. She was led intervention in Libya, disaster, right-wing idea. You know, she was in favor of NAFTA, disaster, right-wing idea. She was in favor of TPP, pushed for it 45 times, disaster, right-wing idea. She was in favor of deregulating Wall Street, disaster, right-wing idea. So what do? You got to polish the turd. That's what you got to do. Oh, I don't know what you mean. No, totally. This is she's great. She's tremendous. She's amazing. And I'll just sexist if you disagree with her. Look, we have people of color disagreeing with you and saying that you're not being fair to Hillary Clinton. So obviously, if you respond and disagree, you're racist. These are the kind of tactics they had to use. So now supposed left-wing journalists have just become propagandists, and they're now using the same tricks of the right. You smear people who disagree with you. You smear people who besmirch the queen. You smear people and go after their character, when in reality, the only people whose character has been impugned here is yours. All right, one more, then we'll take our final break. David Pakman from The David Pakman Show did a fantastic segment on a huge issue involving the media. Let's watch, and then we'll discuss.
If you are concerned about the problem of narrow range of ideas in media in the United States with too few owners and the horrific consolidation that we've seen over the last 15 or 20 years, it is about to get a lot worse. An oligarchy is when a small group of people has control of either a country or an organization or an industry or an institution. And today I need to talk to you about the institution of news media in the United States. You might remember that Comcast bought MSNBC Universal, which includes MSNBC, meaning Comcast owns MSNBC, one of the few cable news channels. And now we have learned over the weekend that AT&T is going to buy CNN and more, because they've actually reached a deal to acquire Time Warner for more than $80 billion. If this is successful, it's still an if, but it appears to be moving forward, at least for now, AT&T would gain control of some major brands, including HBO, including Warner Brothers Entertainment, and CNN. Last year, AT&T already acquired DirecTV for $48.5 billion. I cannot possibly overstate the importance of this.
So I recommend watching the rest of his clip. He dives into the issue further. But here's why this is incredibly important. Quality is going to go down. The price is going to go up. And we're basically marching towards a monopoly. And we're consolidating power in fewer and fewer hands. Now, not only is that going to give you a more narrow worldview and a worldview that represents the interests of the people who own the company, but also, you know who should be most angry about this? Capitalists. Because this is not capitalism. This is not. This is corporatism. So capitalism would be fair competition. Corporatism is basically when the government allows, you know, the currently existing corporations to have a lockdown on the market. And oftentimes that manifests like it did in Wall Street with the bailing out of certain corporations and propping them up. So one understanding of corporatism is socialism for the rich, socialism for the corporations, and rugged individualistic capitalism for you. Now, this here, what we're talking about, is another version of corporatism, because it's just, well, let's have the currently existing corporations gobble up the other corporations and let's move towards fewer and fewer different media companies for this issue, but it's happening in other, you know, with other industries as well. But yeah, the results of that are absolutely disastrous. And the solution to this is simple, and nobody discusses it. All you have to do is enforce currently existing antitrust laws. So again, for those who don't know, antitrust laws, they basically are laws that ensure free and fair competition in a capitalist marketplace. So if one business becomes too powerful and takes up too much of the market, it is inevitable the prices will go up, the quality will go down. So antitrust laws exist to protect the consumer, where they can step in, break them up, and then you have competition again, and naturally, in some areas at least, competition yields the best results. So, you know, that's the whole idea of capitalism. I'm not anti-capitalist. We've discussed this before on the show. I believe in a hybrid system of socialism and capitalism, just kind of like they have in, you know, Western Europe is a great example, or in Scandinavia, I should say. So the results of this are going to be disastrous. There was deregulation of the telecommunications industry back under Bill Clinton, and it's been progressing ever since, and it's gotten worse and worse and worse. And now I feel like we're fending off a merger every few months, a gigantic merger that, again, would screw over the consumer because prices would go up and quality would go down. If anything, we need more of these companies, not less of these companies, because when you consolidate more power in fewer and fewer hands, again, what's the end goal of this? What's the end goal? You want to keep marching in this direction? Well, eventually you'll get to fucking Pravda. You'll get to one entity that it does all the news and information, and they're super powerful and super rich, and they will be in bed with the government. So it might as well be the government, an arm of the government, disseminating all the information. We don't want this. Conservatives, capitalists, and liberals and socialists, we should all be against it. We should all want more information. We should all want a broader range of ideas. And we should all want power in fewer and fewer hands when it comes to the media, especially for this industry because it's so important for the health of the democracy. You're not going to get good coverage from these gigantic companies that have deals in front of the government on climate change, for example. And David brings this up in his clip. You know, you have a lot of these companies that have investments in other companies that are involved with the oil and gas industry. And so are they going to hire voices that are critical and speak about climate change and say, hey, we need to go in the other direction when that directly affects their bottom line? No. Are they going to hire people that say we should get money out of politics when they get an influx of ad money because of money in politics? No. So we got to break up the companies. We got to make them smaller, and we got to have better competition. We got to get a broader range of ideas out there. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump on Obamacare. We spoke about it yesterday. I got a new video on it for you today. And then we'll get into a jackass congressman is calling for revolution. What an idiot. All right, stay right there, guys. Thank you. Son of a bitch. All right, guys. Here we go. D. Trizzy's got some thoughts for us on Obamacare. D. Trizzy is now Donald Trump's nickname. Not sure he deserves it, but whatever. The Toronto Star dug up some video on Donald Trump from 2010 discussing Obamacare, and look at what he thought.
As a human being, I like to see people. It's inconceivable that, you know, people are sick, like you get sick or I get sick or the kids get sick, and you bring them to a doctor. Inconceivable that, you know, 31 or 33 million people can't do that. And so on one level, I think something had to be done. On another level, it's really going to cost a lot of money. But, yeah, right now, he's certainly looking like a hero.
He's looking good right now, and so are you.
Wow. Obama's looking like a hero for passing Obamacare. And Donald Trump expressing some basic humanity. He's like, yeah, you know, look, on a human level, I think it's great. It might cost a lot, but it's great, by the way. It doesn't cost a lot. In fact, it reduces the deficit, and we've spoken about the reasons why before on the show. You're talking about a mostly free market reform. You're mandating people go to the private insurance industry and buy health care, or health insurance, I should say. So we should start a game, and the game should be called Figure Out What Donald Trump Really Believes. Now, to be fair to Donald Trump, we could also call it Figure Out What Hillary Clinton Really Believes, because there's endless videos. We've played them for you on the show of Hillary Clinton contradicting herself on almost every issue. But that exists for both candidates. And it's so sad because, again, if you're somebody who's a really diehard Hillary Clinton supporter or a diehard Donald Trump supporter, I think you're a silly human being. I do, because there's so much evidence out there that they do flip-flop on everything and they have no core beliefs. So since that's the case, it means you cannot, it's not possible to support them just based on policy substance. So since it's not based on policy substance, what the fuck is it based on? Well, it's based on how you feel about the candidates. Your feelings, your little toddler picking your favorite presidential candidate. That's what it is. You don't care about the policy. If you care about the policy, you conclude, I don't know what the fuck they want, man. I don't know what they want. So since it's not based on the policy, because they flip-flop like it's nobody's business, you're in a fucking personality cult, die-hard supporter of either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Again, for somebody like me who focuses on politics, it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the idea that many people pick a candidate and they're not going through their record and their policy proposals with a fine-tooth comb. If you do that with Trump and Clinton, there's no way you can walk away even thinking they're coherent, because they're not coherent. So what's the driving factor for both of them? Probably narcissism and self-aggrandizement. And it's not that hard to piece that one together either. So if you love them and you're a diehard supporter and you're always playing defense for your candidate and offense against the other candidate, stop. All right, next. Former congressman and current right-wing radio host Joe Walsh decided to make an ass of himself on Twitter. He does that pretty often. And he said the following, quote, on November 8th, I'm voting for Trump. On November 9th, if Trump loses, I'm grabbing my musket. You in? Yeah. Again, former congressman. Now, I think Jake Tapper was asked him, like, hey, man, what exactly does this mean? And Joe Walsh responded, perhaps seeing the damage that was done, and he's like, oh, it means... Is he going to protest or something? You buying this? So he's trying to wiggle his way out of it and be like, I'm not calling for violence or, you know, people to do the wrong thing after the election. I don't know what you mean. Metaphorical. When I say I'm grabbing my musket, I'm talking about my dick. On November 9th, if Trump loses, I'm grabbing my musket. He's going to grab his dick because he's upset that Trump lost. He's going to make himself feel better by jerking off. Maybe. I don't know. Is anybody buying this? No? No. dude, you can't say that. Don't say that. Like, who does that? It's just such a stupid thing to say. And just imagine, you know, flip the script. Imagine it was a prominent member of the New Black Panthers who said, if Obama loses back in 2012, hey, if Obama loses, you know, we're going to grab our guns and go to the street. Now, the only thing that makes it better is that he said musket. And muskets take roughly 3.5 days to reload. And it's not an effective fighting thing. What are you going to use your musket against the fucking government that has chemical weapons and biological weapons and nuclear weapons and, you know, fucking drones and fighter jets and all that shit? So that's the only thing that's saving him is that he's a musket, not gun. But you can imagine the response if somebody in the New Black Panther said, "Well, we're gonna take out our guns if Obama loses," or if I don't know, somebody in CARE, the Council on American and Islamic Relations, if they came out and said, you know, hey, if Hillary loses, we'll be out there with our guns. People would say, "Whoa, pump your brakes, bitch! What are you saying?" But I feel like we're just so used to this kind of like violent or violent-ish rhetoric from the right, and I say ish again because he said musket, so he has an out to say it's metaphorical, but still, violent-ish rhetoric. We're so used to it from the right that we're like, yeah, whatever. Remember when Sarah Palin put the crosshairs on there was like a congresswoman who just got shot, Gabby Giffords, and Sarah Palin's out there putting the fucking crosshairs, like, oh yeah, this is how we feel about the election. Everybody's like, what are you doing, man? You can't do that. So the violent rhetoric is an issue. And remember, guys, Donald Trump in 2012, when Mitt Romney lost the election, he went on a tweet storm where he literally called for revolution. This was when Mitt Romney, fucking, you know, human G.I. Joe, who couldn't inspire anybody. When he lost, Trump had a meltdown, and he said revolution, and oh my God. At the time, they had, Romney was up in the popular vote, but he was projected to lose, obviously, you know, based on statistical models and based on the fact that more liberal states hadn't had the votes counted yet. So they knew he was going to lose. So, but he's like, how is this possible? He's down in the popular vote, but they're saying he lost. Revolution! And then meanwhile, of course, later on, Obama won the popular vote handily. But he called for revolution then. Imagine today this election, if Donald Trump loses and he does like the same thing. Well, now he's got like an army of 25% of the country, 40% max, but die hard 25% of them who are, they're like, okay, whatever you say, dear leader. He has some sort of meltdown, he says something irresponsible, and then you got congressmen like this, former congressman like Joe Walsh, who seems to be right there with him, just like, yeah, you know, hey, if we lose, by the way, if we win democracy, tremendous, believe me, fantastic. If we win democracy, good. If we lose, grab your guns. Shows how principled they are and how much they really believe in the system. And that's not to say there aren't problems with the system. We've spoken about it before, massive media bias. You know, in the primary, the DNC snubbing Bernie Sanders, tipping the scales in favor of Hillary Clinton. You know, we've gone on and on about that. And that is a real thing that you can discuss. But when you say, as he did in 2012, revolution, if my side loses, or as Joe Dipshit is trying to say here, like, no, I might grab my gun, you know, if Trump loses, that's not cool, man. That's not cool. Pump your brakes a little bit. Be a little more responsible, because there are fucking crazy people out there who are going to go further and going to act as a result of this. And we got a story on it coming a little bit later. You know, there was a story from Kansas about a terrorist attack that was planned, and they're going to kill Muslims and even kill their babies, and they had these crazy things, and they planned an attack for the day after the election, and the FBI foiled the plot, and it was ready to go, man. They were serious about it. Well, now we got another instance like that, direct threats of violence, and this is this extreme rhetoric which is pointing in this direction. Okay. All right, Rudy Giuliani is going to come out swinging for Donald Trump, as he always does. But he's going to go a little too far this time. Rudy Giuliani is going to defend Donald Trump here, and boy, is he going to make a bold proclamation in the process.
The hate and the racism out of so many people who are saying,
we're
going to
do
this.
You
don't think Breitbart News, Stephen Bannon, the architect.
Breitbart News is not running for office.
But Stephen Bannon is the architect of Donald Trump's campaign right now. What do you believe Breitbart
runs? Nobody runs Donald Trump's campaign.
Then what do you call the CEO of his campaign?
And all this stuff you're throwing around. Racist? The last thing in the world Donald Trump is a racist. I know him for 28 years. The man likes white people, he likes black people, he likes Hispanic people, he plays golf with them. He opened up the first club in Palm Beach that allowed Jewish people, black people, Italian people like me, who couldn't get into those clubs, to get into those clubs.
Can you say that Stephen Bannon run Donald Trump's campaign? He's the
Donald Trump runs Donald Trump's campaign.
And what's he doing even paying Stephen Bannon?
There are a lot of people that do different things, but to say that Donald Trump is a racist is outrageous. And to call anybody a racist is outrageous.
Well, hold on.
There are people
you can call racist.
To call anybody a racist is outrageous. What? What if they're racist? I mean, what a ridiculous thing to say. What if it's somebody in the KKK? You know, what if they say, hey, I'm racist? To call anybody racist is outrageous. You guys are kooky. Kooky liberals who think there might be some people who are racist in the world. Unbelievable. Who says that? Who says that? Okay, so... But let's put that aside because that's obviously ridiculous and that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I think if you press him on that, he'd be like, okay, yeah, maybe I didn't word that right because that's obviously untrue. But put aside the, you know, why you can't call anybody racist. Put that aside. Just focus on Donald Trump here for a second. Now, I didn't know this until yesterday, and it's my fault. I should have known this. I should have done the research. I should have seen the articles from back when they originally broke. I didn't. I missed it somehow. But Donald Trump was actually sued repeatedly for racial housing discrimination. And it happened when he started his career in 1973, him and his dad. And then it happened through the 70s and the early 80s. And he settled out of court, but he settled because the feds had, quote, compelling evidence that they had coded applications for minorities with a C for colored. Wow. So, sued repeatedly for racial housing discrimination. They just didn't want the colors in them buildings. And then, by the way, they went right back to doing it after the first time. That's amazing. So, like, okay, anyway, brush that aside. We'll go right back to doing it. We want to keep the blacks out of here. Just got to keep them out of our buildings. Okay, pound the gavel, pound the gavel, pound the gavel. Yes, you can call him racist, but... furthermore, let's broaden the term a little bit here. Bigotry. Is he a bigot? Well, I mean, the guy said he wants nationwide stop and frisk. Stop and frisk, it's been proven that it disproportionately targets minorities. It has a failure rate of over 90%. So you're just taking away the Fourth Amendment protection from unreasonable search and seizure from minorities. That's all you're doing with stop and frisk. And he supports nationwide stop and frisk. He also wants to kick out all undocumented immigrants. He's been crystal clear about that. You know, 11 million. Do you really think he's referring to Hans and Franz? He's not. Don't be ridiculous. You know who he has in mind. Like, it's such a hacky argument and a sidestep to be like, no, he really means European immigrants. Stop. You know that's not true. And then, I mean, he also said Mexicans, they're rapists, they're criminals. I assume some are good people. So in other words, flip it. Not saying, hey, some might be criminals, but most are good people. He flipped it. He said, the Mexicans, they come in here, they're rapists, they're criminals. I assume some are good people. So yeah, I'd say that's a bigoted thing to say, but also, he had the Muslim ban. I am going to ban 1.6 billion people from coming into our country because Al-Qaeda exists and ISIS exists. Well, that's like the textbook definition of bigotry. I'm going to say they're all guilty or guilty enough, so I'm not going to let them in. They're all guilty enough for the sins of the worst ones, so I'm just not going to let them in. What else do you want me to refer to that as? What other term is there? You know, and look, you can be nuanced and be detailed about it, and you could say, hey, is there a problem with fundamentalist Muslims? Of course there is. It's a huge problem, no doubt about it. But is a logical policy conclusion from that to say, I'm going to ban all of them? No, that would be bigoted, because then you're punishing people who have nothing fucking to do with them. You know, there's so many different schools of Islam, Sufi Islam, Ahmadiyya Islam, super duper peaceful, benign, but even just moderate Sunni Muslims, moderate Shias. I mean, the Shia Islam, the way it's structured, is a lot more like the Catholicism of Islam, if you will. And there are stricter rules for jihad, and they're not doing a jihad. So because there are extremists, because there are Salafi jihadists, he's a ban them all, ban them all. Well, again, I don't know what other term you want me to use for that other than bigoted. That is definitely bigoted. Absolutely. Again, that's just like with his stop and frisk policy. I see some black people commit crimes. I see black people commit crimes at a disproportionate rate compared to the white population. Therefore, all black people should be under extreme scrutiny and we should do nationwide stop and frisk. It just doesn't, that's not logical, and that is a bigoted way of thinking. And finally, I'll just throw this out there. He was like the number one birther in the country years after President Obama had proven, of course he was born in the United States. First of all, the dude ran for president and became president of the United States. Do you really think the respective government agencies that are tasked with looking into that to make sure he's a citizen let that one slip? They just let it slip. Hey, nah, this one wasn't born in the U.S., but what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? No, the government agencies obviously grilled him like they grill every other candidate. And by the way, it's hilarious that Obama's tarred with you're not born in the U.S. when John McCain was literally not born in the U.S. I'm not kidding. He was born on a military base in Panama. So they're like, oh, anyway, he wasn't born here, but shut the fuck up. Ted Cruz, born in Canada. Who cares? Shut the fuck up. He came out of an American vagina. But hold on, even under your worst-case scenario with Obama, that would have been the case. He came out of an American vagina when he was in Kenya, according to them. Well, that's the same standard you say it's okay for Ted Cruz. Because, hey, the mom's American, so it is what it is. So they just flipped the standard based on what? Based on what? It's not even just the political party in this case. It is the race. Nobody accused Bill Clinton of not being an American citizen. They despise Bill Clinton, but nobody ever said, I don't think you're American. Why? What's the difference between Barack Obama and Bill Clinton? Let me figure this fucking thing out. Don't be ridiculous. So he was a leader in the birther movement. President Obama, when they started pressing him on this, he's already been vetted, he's already president. Oh, yeah, birth certificate. Where's the birth certificate? He releases his birth certificate. They go, yeah, gotcha. That's the short form. We want the long form. When you give the long form, fine, then we'll accept it, but you didn't give the long form. He's like, okay, here's the long form. They're like, oh, yeah, ha, ha. Now we don't believe that either. He's like, what the fuck are you saying? So you know what they do? They go to records in a Hawaii newspaper archive, and they found a birth announcement of him. And they're like, here, see, they announced his birth in Hawaii. They're like, aha, we still don't believe you. We still don't believe you. And Donald Trump the entire time, you know what Donald Trump moved the goalposts to? He was right along with him. Show your short form, show your short form. Show your long form, show his long form. Show the article, show the article. He's like, I want to see his college records. Oh, for fuck's sake, man. At what point can I call you a raging bigot? Because that is what you are. So spare me, Rudy. Oh, you know, I'm appalled that you would call Donald Trump racist, and I'm appalled that you would think he's a bigot. You know what? Nobody's a racist. There, I said it. How's that for a truth bomb? That's not a truth bomb. That's a stupid bomb. Okay, let me squeeze in one or two more here. A 40-year-old man named Mark Fagan was arrested on October 19th in California on suspicion of making terrorist threats. So what he did is he called an Islamic center multiple times, and he did direct threats of violence. I'm going to kill you, and, you know, these are profanity-laced rants, I think is how they worded it in the article, and he was crystal clear about that. Now, again, he did it multiple times. So starting to see a pattern and starting to see, oh, shit, this could happen. Now, not only that, he posted on Twitter about a coming war after the election. If Hillary Clinton wins, he wants to go out there and fight. And then cops proceeded to find an arsenal at his house. He had just countless guns, some of them registered to him, some of them not, just barrels of bullets. And so this guy is brought up on charges, and again, the charges are making terrorist threats. I don't know exactly the amount of time that he's facing in jail, but this is a really clear case of like, okay, you may have just prevented a disastrous thing from occurring. Are you ready for this? Here's the little twist in the story for you. He's out on bail. $77,000 bail. He's out on it. And this guy, man, it's so creepy. So there's somebody I follow on Twitter, Imran Siddiqui. He's an activist with CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And he runs Hate Hurts, which is a site that covers all bigotry. And, you know, he's a great activist who's all against all forms of bigotry. And he talks about it very openly and honestly. And so, you know, he's witty, says a lot of funny shit on Twitter. This guy was a Twitter troll of his, where I'm not sure if he made a threat to Imran, but, you know, there were, like, whenever he says anything of, like, hey, look, here's a clear case of a Muslim family being a victim of a hate crime, this guy would respond and, you know, effectively say, like, oh, yeah, but Muslim terrorists exist, so gotcha. Like, what are you saying? So, but this is, like, the Twitter troll come terrorist moment, where the guy literally called an Islamic center multiple times, direct threats of violence, spoke about a war on social media, had endless guns and stockpiling it, to the point where the authorities thought it was serious enough, all right, we got to arrest him, we got to bring this guy to trial, but now he's out on bail. This is just like the Robert Duggar case that we spoke about. This is probably going back over a year ago now, where this guy had a detailed plan. Hey, man, we're going to go in there and we're going to slaughter the Muslims. We're going to kill the Muslims in New York. By the way, no evidence these Muslims were radical in any way. And also the irony of, like, this guy's like, I got to save the country from radicalism and extremism, so I'm going to murder innocent people. That makes you the radical. That makes you the extremist, you fucking epic moron. But Robert Duggar has a plan. Okay, we're going to go in there. We're going to kill people. We're going to kill the women and children. He also had gotten out on bail. You know, we covered the story the other week. The FBI busted up a plot in Kansas. There were three men who were planning for the day after the election to do an attack on Somali Muslim immigrants. They laid out in gruesome detail, let's kill the cockroaches, let's drench our bullets in pig's blood, we're not going to spare anybody, I can't wait to kill their babies, is what they said. Look, all the time for all these different stories, very little coverage. I had to go to a fucking, like, LA-specific website to get the information for the Mark Fagan story. I mean, that's insanity. Now, imagine for a second the exact same set of facts, but flip it. You have a Muslim, does a direct call to a Christian center, a church, whatever, it does multiple times direct threats of violence. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to slaughter you. I'm going to behead you, you infidels. Imagine that happens. Imagine there's, you know, posting stuff on Twitter. Allah will come back and slay all the infidels and I will lead the charge or something to that effect. Imagine cops find an arsenal at that dude's house. Hey, you're out on bail. And nobody even fucking covers it in the shitty media. Would never happen. Would never happen. Oh, the ISIS terrorist plot broken up in the United States. Oh, my God, this is crazy. Let's talk about it for 3 days straight on all the mainstream networks. And by the way, oh, my God, also, let's make sure we hold these people accountable. If that person was let out on bail, there would be a firestorm in the country unmatched by anything. And perhaps an ISIS terrorist planning an attack. You have the evidence, the direct threats of violence, the arsenal, the posts on social media. And just let him out on bail. Never happen. So there is a double standard. There is a double standard here, and it's unacceptable. And you need to muster up the outrage regardless of which quarters the terrorism comes from. Because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about violence targeted against innocent people, political, religious violence against innocent people. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable when fundamentalist Muslims are the perpetrators. It's unacceptable when jackasses like this, white dudes. I don't know if he's Christian, but when somebody like this is the perpetrator. So you should have the same outrage regardless of who the victims are and who the victims aren't, and that's just not the case. Okay. All right, guys. I'm out of time. I love you. We'll be back tomorrow for Awesome Friday Show. Same time, same place. You know the drill. I'll see everybody there, baby. Have a good one. Thanks so much again for the amazing night of the fundraising for the new studio. GoFundMe.com/secular talk. Go help out if you can. I love you. All right, peace, guys.